This is the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio.
We bring in David French, senior writer for National Review, senior fellow at the National Review Institute, and an attorney. He concentrates his practice on constitutional law and the law of armed conflict. Thanks very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me.
So, you know, I'm going through this, right? And I always say on the show that I view myself as pro-law enforcement. And I try and look at things through a pro-law enforcement prism. And whatever you think about the border dollars, should it be $5.7 billion? Should it be $2 billion? Should it be zero? Whatever you think it ought to be. Am I wrong, David, in simply saying, when I read this and I see the effects this is having, it is simply unsustainable for the very things that those of us who view ourselves as pro-law enforcement care about, including national security, that we simply need to open the government?
Yeah, it's absolutely unsustainable. Absolutely. I mean, let's just say this for a moment. How long can we fairly ask vital, critical employees to work without pay? I mean, really, how long, as human beings, how long can we ask people who fulfill critical functions in our national life to work without pay? And let's be honest about this. I mean, most people in the U.S., or many people in the U.S., work from paycheck. They live from paycheck to paycheck. They need their paycheck to make their house payment. They need their paycheck to make a car payment. It's the way people live. I know I can't sustain working without a paycheck for very long. And so to ask people to do this is just fundamentally unjust. It's fundamentally unjust.
So with that in mind, again, without getting into, is there a way for me to ask you this question and say, without getting into who's right or wrong about the border and how much money should be allocated to the wall versus other aspects of improving our immigration system, shouldn't the president just say, I'm going to open the government, at least for now, do some sort of face-saving measure, right? Democrats can promise that there will be some amount of billions of dollars that will go towards the wall, and they will begin a conversation. I mean, shouldn't it be that basic? Or am I simplifying this too much?
Well, I think there's a couple of paths here, actually. One is for the Democrats to give him some funding on the wall and extract from him some pretty extravagant promises on DACA and other immigration measures.
But why not do that later? Why not? I mean, that's the negotiation, right? And I get why this is a hard negotiation. Without judging who's right or wrong on the negotiation, in the meantime, shouldn't they open the government?
Oh, I think the government should open. I think the government should open.
And that's in the president's hands, right?
I also wish there were unicorns, and I would love for there to be pots of gold at the end of or rainbows. When we're talking about this, the first question is, okay, yes, I want the government to open. The next question is, what are the realistic ways under which it will open, given the political actors we have? Because we only govern a country with the politicians that we have.
Right, but that seems to me to be making excuses, right? I mean, I think that, my concern
No, it's a condemnation.
It's a condemnation of everybody. And when you condemn everybody, you're condemning nobody. I mean, in my view, when you just say, well, you know, it's Congress's fault and it's the president's fault and this and this and that, it seems to me that, and again, I'm trying to figure out what I'm missing, that it's simpler than that. I get that the president, if he opens the government without a deal, right, that there is a face-saving issue there, right? But I think you have to agree that as you said, it's unsustainable. I'm furious reading this FBI report. And so my position, you know, up to this point, I was thinking, well, I hope they can work something out. They've got to work something out. You know, these guys hope the Democrats will give a little here, and I hope. But for now, I'm reading this report, and I'm looking at our immigration cases being put on hold. I'm looking at FBI agents telling me they can't do their jobs to protect the country. And my only response is, then the president needs to open up the government and negotiate. I know that's what the Democrats are saying, and therefore I guess it becomes a win for the Democrats. And I hate that. I hate the fact that I have to sort of make what sounds like a political decision. But to me, it doesn't feel like that's political. And that's what I'm trying to ask you about. What am I missing there?
Well, no, I think that the problem is, and the reality is if you say open the government and negotiate later, what Trump and what everybody knows is he will not get maybe even a foot of wall. And the fact of the matter is, and this let's just be real clear about this. The president could have had the wall before. He could have had the wall before. And the psychological problem here is that the instant he opens the government without a wall is the instant that he turns to the base that he has been focusing his presidency on catering to and says to them, I did not deliver the wall. And I will not in my first term deliver the wall.
Aren't there other ways? Aren't there other ways he can try and force the wall without? I mean, the way you describe it, it does sound like holding everyone else hostage on behalf of the wall, even if you believe in the wall.
Right. No, he's unquestionably. This is about the wall. I mean, it's about the wall, period. And the problem here is, look, let's be honest. As of late December, he was ready to fund the government and do exactly what you were saying, fund the government and try to figure out some way to negotiate on the wall. Then
embarrass the Democrats, talk about how they wanted to get rid of ICE. You know, fair game. That's all fair.
Right.
Right.
Then the talk radio world and the Ann Coulter world went nuts. They went nuts because they realized the truth that when Nancy Pelosi declares the wall an immorality, when the victorious House Democrats come in after Trump doubled down on immigration in the midterms and lost. And as soon as Nancy Pelosi declared the wall an immorality, essentially treating the wall as essentially a gigantic billboard stretching around the southern border that says we're racist. I mean, that's sort of what the argument. That as soon as that happened, the Coulters and others in the talk radio world thought, well, this is our only chance. This is our only chance. This is it. And when Trump tweeted on December 20th, border is tight, essentially prepping his people to say, well, maybe I don't have a wall, but we've secured the border in other ways, people went ballistic. And that's what this is about. And the problem is all of those dynamics that were in play before Christmas are in play times 10 now.
Right.
And that's why this is, as a practical result, that means that Trump, look at it like this. There's the concept of sunk costs, and I don't like to use war analogies because this isn't a war. It's a political squabble. But in the political context, this is kind of like the Battle of Verdun, where Trump is just feeding political resources into the maw of this war of attrition. And that's where we are. And the fact of the matter is an awful lot of Republicans don't agree with the strategy. But you know what? They're just
and I want to ask you about
the base
that.
As Trump is.
I want to ask you about that because, you know, the National Review is a leading publication in the, you know, amongst conservatives. I have to say, and we'll talk about this later, you know, you've written pieces on, you know, sometimes critical. You never know exactly which way you're going to come out, which always makes your pieces interesting. But you are definitely, your audience tends to be right-leaning for the National Review. So I ask you, at what point, as the government shutdown continues, and I read reports from FBI agents, not officials, about immigration cases being put on hold, the very issue that we're here about all the government services from the IRS to the FAA to FDA to people trying to protect us, not getting paid, these people are eventually going to quit, they're going to walk out. At what point do you think that most conservatives will say, all right, enough is enough. Just let's open the government and then let's fight. And then let's fight like heck. But in the meantime, let's open the government.
Okay, let me give you the completely honest response.
Yeah.
There will not be a time when most conservatives say it's time to give up on the wall and reopen the government.
Not give up
I
on
don't
the wall.
See that
not give
now.
Up on the wall. Just
but,
just
no, no,
for now.
The same thing. Those are
why
the same
is it the
thing
same?
In their mind.
Why does it have to be the same thing?
Because they don't see a path to a wall. Now, let me say this. But the question isn't about most conservatives. It's a critical mass of conservatives who get tired of this. It doesn't have to be most. You know, if your base weakens and erodes even a few points, because remember, you know, a Senate election is not won unless you've got a three candidate race. The Senate election is not won with 40% of the vote. It's not won with 38% of the vote. So if you begin to see, and you're in a swing state, and you begin to see erosion of the president's support, even if your base, even if the GOP base is still strongly with the president, you don't win with 38%. And so you'll have people who will say, look, you know, I'm sorry. You don't win elections with 38%. And there has got to be people stepping forward at some point and saying, look, at the end of the day, this president had an opportunity to get a wall multiple times in the last 2 years. His failure to do that is on him. I will not put the future of the GOP, and I will not put the health of our economy at the whim of a man who is right now furiously politically backpedaling from his previous failures. His previous failures are his previous failures. My responsibility is to do what's best for the country today. And not enough people are there yet, but they need to get there.
And that's because, in my view, they're not framing this as a national security pro-law enforcement issue. And that's the way I'm going to start framing it. After reading this FBI report today, from now on, anytime I talk about this shutdown, I'm going to talk about it through pro-law
enforcement. Republicans don't like the FBI anymore.
Sorry, go ahead. What?
You forgot. The Republicans don't like the FBI anymore.
But is that really true? I mean, they claim, if you ask them, I mean, you know, when I had Sean Hannity on my show and I was challenging him on that, he claims that he loves the FBI. He just doesn't like the leadership and, you know, rogue agents.
You know, let's put it this way. The FBI right now that'll change. It will change in the future because I think dispositionally most Republicans are supportive of law enforcement. But for right now, the FBI has a declining level of support amongst Republican rank file. The TSA is in crisis right now, but the TSA is not an institution that has an enormous amount of support amongst rank and file Republicans. So, you know, part of this is as
so how are you
right
pro-law
now,
enforcement then? Then what does pro-law enforcement mean?
Well, this is a longer conversation, but
we got plenty of time.
Our hyper-partisan time, people tend to be pro-law enforcement when law enforcement is going after people they don't like, and they tend to be deeply suspicious of law enforcement when law enforcement goes after people they do. And I'm sorry to be that cynical, but that's pretty much where we are, at least in amongst the hyper-partisans who are driving the public conversation in this country.
You know, no, look, it's true about the hyper-partisans. I mean, you know, it's been the far left. It's always said you can't trust prosecutors. You know, they're all corrupt. You can't trust the police. And, you know, I've always been one who has challenged that. And now I feel like I'm taking on the far right, saying the same thing. It's crazy. But let's take a call or two. Chris, I think calling from Montana, joins us now. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. What do you got?
Well, I thought I'd give a conservative perspective on the issue, a bit of background. I was a liberal when I was a kid. Then I went to law school, transitioned into classical liberalism, worked for the government, not the federal, state, for 10 years. Left state government and have been self-employed ever since. After leaving and going into the private sector, and I left state government because of ideological corruption that I saw at the state level, where people stopped answering the very basic question about their government service, who do I work for? And their answers were, the ideology that I believe in, whether it's environmental, whether it's government first, citizen second, they stopped answering the question that they work for the citizens of the United States. And my suggestion to you, Dan, is that the Senate and the White House are controlled by people who are concerned about border security. We want a wall because a wall works. I would, the guy's name is escaping me, but one of the Hoover Institution fellows, the guy with the middle name that always gets talked about, he just did a wonderful half-an-hour expose, an expert on everything California and immigration-related. And he's right on everything. We need a big sign to the people south of the border that says, we are not an open borders country.
All right,
you need
let's assume you're right on all of that for a moment. Let's assume that people, you know, there are a lot of people who are going to agree with every single word of what you said. And as a result, then, you think it is worth waiting it out no matter how long it takes, no matter how much our national security is jeopardized, no matter how many services that we can no longer have in order to, you hope, get it?
I think most of the services provided by the federal government we could do without permanently.
FBI, you want to get rid of the FBI, the FDA, TSA?
We can go through a agency by agency if you like, but I think there are some things that could devolve to the states. There are some things that need to remain at the federal level. You know, I don't think it's worth wasting everyone's time going through each one. But nevertheless, I think it's going to prove the mettle of government workers who think they are doing a service to the nation and that is the most important thing, and the folks that are there because it's a comfortable job. Well, now it's not comfortable. So move on.
Well, you know what? But that's a very, you know what? That's really nice. It's really nice that you can sit there and you've got your own business. So as a result, you know, you're protected. But these people whose next paycheck prevents them from having to be able to pay for anything for their children, I'm sorry to just sit there and say, well, you know what? They've got to be good Americans and just sit it out. You know, let them say that, but the rest of us shouldn't be saying that, right? That's not for the rest of us to judge.
I've never protected, Dan. I work for myself. At any given moment, catastrophe could strike.
But it's not because someone's turning off the spigot and they could turn it back on at any point. That would drive you bananas.
I'm in control of my own spigot.
That's my point.
That's the one thing that is the benefit with all the risks that come along with it of being self-employed. But I don't think we need to get into the details on that. I'm just saying that I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for federal government employees going a month without pay.
All right.
2 months without pay. 3 months without pay.
Right. Because
I don't care.
Well, I understand you don't care. And you know what? First of all, I respect the fact that you're intellectually honest. Because a lot of people are not. You know, that is an intellectually honest. I view it as a very sad and depressing position that I hope, you know, doesn't reflect America as a whole. But, you know, if people's position is, you know, screw them. I don't care. If federal the FBI and the people who protect our food and protect our airways, etc., I don't care if they don't get paid. Okay, you know what? Then that's the position to take. Chris, thanks for calling in. And by the way, Chris, I want to let you know I have enormous respect for anyone who's got their own business. It is an incredibly stressful situation day to day, and you know I have enormous respect for that. Thanks for calling in, Travis. From Illinois joins us. Hey, Travis, how you doing?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I want to jump on board with the last caller. Not to say that I don't so much care if people get paid or not. You know, I've been laid off from a job before, weeks before Christmas, and you know, had to figure it out. And in the long term, it worked out well, and it drove me to a new career. But The reality of it is if we're talking about 800,000 people working for the government and that's just the federal level. So if we are at that point, maybe it's time to start looking at how bloated the government really is. You know, a lot of these things,
let's be clear,
they're not working well as it is.
But let's be clear. So when you're talking about the bloating, I'm talking about the FBI report today. So you want to cut back on the FBI and the TSA and places like that, immigration courts. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. That's what I'm talking about here.
The FDA, I do want to cut back on the TSA. The FDA is not working as it is.
All right, air traffic control, let's cut them too, right?
No, I'm saying that, I'm not saying that we cut them. I'm saying we cut them from being federal government employees. So when you look at the things like the TSA, they could work perfectly well as a private company, as a federal, as a state agency. I just don't think they need to be handled at the federal level. Look at the foundation of our government, it has very little to do with a ton of people. They have very limited responsibilities, but we've built this all up that now there's so much of our country that relies on them.
Well, I'm reading the FBI report. So again, I view myself as pro-law enforcement. I'm getting really tired of people who, and I'm not saying you because you haven't said anything about this, Travis, but I get tired of people who claim to me that they're pro-law enforcement and then tell me that they don't give a hoot about law enforcement. That's my concern. I'm reading the FBI report. They're telling me what the impact is on the agents, on their ability to do their jobs. And if the answer is, you know what, I don't believe them or I don't care, that's an intellectually honest position that I disagree with.
I 100% agree. I personally don't say that I'm pro-law enforcement. I'm not against law enforcement, but I'm not a person that will tell you that.
Okay, but fair enough.
You can't say you are pro and then say don't pay him. It doesn't
exactly
work that way. That's not
right.
Fair.
All right, let me let David French get in here. David, couple callers here. I've been mouthing off. I haven't given you a chance to weigh in.
Well, first let me just say, if I don't care if people who, through no fault of their own, have been deprived of a paycheck for a month or 2 months, that's not apathy, that's malice. We have an idea in this country that a person is entitled to receive an honest day's pay for an honest day's work, especially if they have, if they've done what they're supposed to do. And what we're telling federal workers right now is, yes, you're working the way you're supposed to work. And yes, we'll give you back pay. But in the meantime, through no fault of your own, you're going to endure financial hardship. And through nothing that you've done, no defect in your work.
Yeah.
There's a conversation to be had about whether the federal government is bloated or the federal government is not bloated. But you deal with that through the legislative process. You deal with that through the political process. You don't deal with that with the government shutdown, because the president, who had the ability to get a wall through for 2 years, failed at the job that he promised the American people he would do when he was elected. That's, it's just remarkable to me the extent to which the president's supporters will give him a pass again and again and again for things that they would never, ever give any other politician in America a pass for. It is almost cult-like, and it is disturbing. It is ridiculous. The level of devotion to Donald Trump amongst his base exceeds the level of devotion I ever saw for George W. Bush, for George H.W. Bush, or for Ronald Reagan. And it is mystifying. It is mystifying, and to the extent that it leads to this kind of behavior, it's destructive.
Let me take one more call. Chad from Tampa joins us now. I think Chad's a federal worker. Hey, Chad, how you doing?
Hey, Dan, how are you doing?
Good. What's going on?
I just wanted to comment about some of the callers calling in about, let the federal workers go without pay and, just saying it from a perspective of just wipe your hands clean kind of thing. Being a federal employee myself, it's really easy for them to say that until usually I find out that, something goes wrong and then they need these services. So it just kind of, bothers me that they're so, we're Americans first. So how can it be so easy just to dismiss a group of people as wasting tax money or something like that, when in reality we're doing a service for you, we're serving you, the people. And just as these, they're private business owners themselves, there's a whole mechanism behind the scenes that's supporting their ability to be a private business owner in America. So how can they just so easily dismiss that, people that are working hard and giving their, dedicating their lives. You know, we take a lot reduction in pay to dedicate ourselves to service. And it just kind of surprises me and it saddens me to find out the people that we work for who are the Americans feel this way about us.
I hear you. Thanks for the call. This has been the Dan Abrams Lawn Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio.